Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. We start hour number two now. And honestly, it is a very difficult day, very trying day, very sad day as the shock starts to wear off and the reality of the situation starts to sink in. And again, it's so unfathomable and so surreal. We're talking about the passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, a number of others on that helicopter yesterday here in Southern California. And if you want to share your thoughts, and if you want to mourn, if you want to grieve, if you want to say anything at all, this is what we're doing today. We did so in hour number one. We'll do so for the next 2 hours. 1-800-636-8686. Just saw another text pop in from another professional athlete who said, quote, "This sucks. This cuts deep." Another star athlete. I mean, the Mamba meant so much to so many different people. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. And you can email the program at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveATake.com. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN will be joining us. Also this hour, Utah Jazz center Rudy Gobert. Next hour, Chris McGee, who has covered the Lakers for quite some time and was very close to Kobe, will share his thoughts too. And we are taking telephone calls. You know, Kobe has a long history with this program. And on just about every single show I've done for the past two decades, he was accessible, he was available, and he always showed up and always delivered. I mean, every single time. And again, this is somebody who did not have to do this. This is somebody who did not need the attention. Somebody who did not need to fulfill more media obligations. Once he achieved legendary status, he could have just shut it down and only done the league minimum, the league required media, but that's not what he did. I go back to 2008. He came in studio on JRIB. Jim Rome is Burning. First of all, the fact that Kobe came in studio was pretty amazing. Again, athletes do not do that. Not if they don't have to. If you can even get them to say yes, generally, it's like, all right, send the camera crew to me. And we do so. At least back then we did so because of the technology. But not Kobe. Kobe said, I'll come in. So what made it remarkable, aside from him deciding to come in, is that the studio itself was not remarkable. That was not exactly the lap of luxury. That was a warehouse across the parking lot from a sheet metal factory. It wasn't like some cool, luxurious building that you wanted to show off. In fact, in a way, I always wanted the presence of a star athlete to be there. I just didn't want them to see where we worked or what the building was like. Part of me was like, oh no, Mamba wants to come in? He's going to see the hood that I work in every single day. But he loved the process. He loved the whole thing. And that was not a building I wanted to show off. But he came down. And one of the things that we talked about that day, going back to 08, was his legacy.
If you thought about how this whole thing ends, when it's all said and done, the final chapter of your career, how you go out?
I've thought about it before. I love to be remembered as a guy that just loved to play the game, worked extremely hard at it, and won. You know, if people could say that about me, I'd be very happy.
Well, Kobe, we got you in studio. It took some doing, but good to finally have you here. I appreciate the visit. Thanks,
man,
so much. Good luck to you.
Man. Thank you.
So then he came back again. That was not the only time. He came back again when Derek Fisher filled in for me as host one day. Derek Fisher hosted the show while I was out. And then in 2010, Kobe came on the show the day after winning the title.
So much riding on it. So when you finally got to the finish line last night, were you feeling, how much of it was joy and how much of it was just relief? Like, the pressure's off. I got the win.
You know, it was both. But it was more joy, though. It was more joy. You know, this is a special group of guys, and I really enjoyed it because of that. Because, you know, it took a lot of intestinal, you know, inner fortitude for us to battle through this game. Because, you know, we were all tired, we were all drained, being down 13, you know, to a team that executes so well, and you know, hardly ever makes mistakes. It was tough, but we just felt so much joy because we were able to look each other in the eye and to a man say, "No, we're going to get this done." It looks ugly right now, looks bleak right now, but we're going to get this done. And the joy comes from guys banding together and making it happen.
How long do you give yourself to unplug before you think about anything basketball or business related?
That's a great question. It's tough for me to think about anything but basketball. That's just the way I've been since I was like five. So it's going to be tough to do. But no, I'll take some time off physically. And, you know, I got to look at my finger and, you know, see what the heck I'm going to do with this thing and kind of go from there.
In other words, you'll have breakfast and go get a lift in.
Pretty much.
Kobe on the show right after the championship. This is what I mean, right? He didn't have to do that. He also came on our Showtime show multiple times. He was always game for anything and everything, including talking dog bleep.
You once said, Kobe, and I quote, "I hate dog shit. I won't go near it. I've got four dogs. I just don't do dog do." Hey, listen, nobody likes dog shit, but what's your beef with dog do?
No, it's like a different kind of a beef, though. Like, for me, it's a psychological thing. I stepped in dog shit one time when I was young, and my grandparents had just sent me some fresh-to-death 1988 Jordans to Italy. And we can't get Jordans in Italy at that time. Couldn't get them. And so I'm out playing in the yard, whatever, and I step in some dog shit and just messed them up. I was, like, in the house trying to get them out in the bathroom, it's probably too much information, but you get the idea.
Oh, no, I do, man. Now I get it. How'd you recover from that, man? That is bad. That is really bad.
I don't think I fully have. I don't think I fully have. I won't pick up dog shit. It's like a traumatic event.
Kobe talking about dog poop on our Showtime show. We're talking about Dwight back in the day, which is what makes Dwight's return and desire to work with Kobe on the slam dunk contest this year even more amazing.
How would you characterize the 1 year you had with Dwight Howard? And if you're being totally honest, is there any part of you that's glad that he did not re-sign with the Lakers?
Well, we didn't see eye to eye. I mean, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. I mean, he has his perspective of how he wants to play, and, you know, how he views how championships should be won, and I had mine. You know, just there wasn't going to be a middle ground because of how different the point of views were.
Kobe talking about Dwight then, that's what makes it so unusual, that Dwight has figured it out. Dwight wanted to work with Kobe. Dwight finally got to it. And then I talked to Kobe about whether or not he would ever leave the Lakers.
You badly want another ring. We've been talking about this. Do you want it badly enough that you would ever leave the Lakers to get it?
No, I can't see myself going any place else. I mean, I was born a Laker. I mean, this is home for me. So, you know, I don't see myself going someplace else just to try to win another championship. You know, my attitude's always been it's going to happen here or it's not going to happen. It's just, you know, that's the way I've always viewed things.
This is part of the reason why Laker fans love Kobe, because he talked about his love for them and for the Lakers. Also, back in 2013, he came on the radio program, this show, and we talked about his approach and his diet. 34, but 17 years in, how old do you feel?
I feel good. I feel fine. You know, I don't feel like I've been playing 17 years. It kind of flew by. You know, physically, I don't have anything to really show for it outside of, you know, the knee situation that is much, much better. Was much, much better in the last 2 years, so.
What about your regimen? I mean, are you changing the way you work out? Are you changing what you eat? You have to evolve. You can't do the same
diet,
things now that you did.
Diet thing.
Diet? Tell me about your diet.
Oh, my God. Like, I've had to scale back the diet and start eating a lot more healthy and kind of paying attention to what, you know, to my intake. That's been the hardest adjustment, actually.
What did you give up?
In-N-Out burgers. I've had to kind of scale back on that, unfortunately.
Dude, you got to be like me. I mean, and plus, if you have kids, you've got a pantry and you've got a bunch of crap in the pantry that you got to shop for the kids, right? They're not playing pro ball. I mean, thing's got to be hard.
Because the kids, you know, my kids, they love In-N-Out, as do I. So I've had to kind of go protein style when I do that. Or I've had, you know, like the sugar cookies that they love to eat. And I've had to have kind of, you know, cut back on that and, you know, eating too much red meat. You know, I had to do more fish and more veggies and, you know, all the stuff that your mom tells you to eat when you're a kid growing up. So
yeah, and it sucks.
That's Kobe a few months after the Achilles injury talking about his health. And that's something I haven't spent much time talking about today, the Achilles injury. There's so many defining moments from his career. The 81 against the Raptors, the 62 points in three quarters against the Mavericks. Remember, he outscored the entire Mavericks roster, 62-61 through three quarters, and then he sat out the fourth. The Game 7 alley-oop to Shaq, remember that?
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant.
Not flinching when Matt Barnes faked that pass into his face, scoring 60 in his final game ever, dragging the Lakers across the finish line in Game 7 of 2010 against Boston. The five rings. But to me, the Achilles might be the most Kobe moment of all time. He tears his Achilles against Golden State in 2013. He needs to be helped to his feet. He pinches his calf. He goes to the free throw line to take the shots instead of coming out of the game. I mean, it was like the most Kobe thing ever. You could talk all you want about the Mamba mentality, but that was seeing it in action. This was Kobe on our radio program after turning 38.
I'm just very thankful being able to have this experience of playing this beautiful game of basketball and to be able to sit here now at 38 years old and having this conversation with you and being able to enjoy my kids growing up. It's been a fantastic ride.
Kobe, how's 38 feel?
Feels awesome, dude. I can't complain, man. I feel awesome. I have more hair on my face than I do on my head, but besides that, it's all good.
Did you notice that answer? Did you hear the enthusiasm about getting older, about being with his kids? It's so powerful. It is so unbelievably sad. And that answer feels so different today. And this is what I mean when I say he was just getting started. Kobe wasn't anywhere near done. He was done playing basketball in the NBA, but everything else was just getting started. And he was excited about it, and he was attacking it. I want to pick that thought up. I want to break right now because Adrian Wojnarowski is coming up, but I have more of my visits with Kobe Bryant. Again, he was on a radio show. I've got a lot of sound because he was always accessible. Came on this show, came on our TV shows, came on our podcast. And the conversations were always absolutely fascinating. So I'll pick that up momentarily. Woj is next. Rudy Gobert is after that. Chris McGee is coming up in hour number three. And again, if you're on hold, hang in there. I will definitely get your phone calls in. 1-800-636-8686. How often do you think about your socks? If you're like I used to be, not very often. But I recently discovered that something had changed the way I think about socks, and always will. They're called Bombas. Bombas are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. Made from premium cotton, Bombas stay warm in the wintertime, but cool in the summer. And every pair comes with a built-in blister tab, innovative arch support, stay-up technology, and a seamless toe. With many colors, patterns, lengths, and styles, Bombas look great in the gym, at the office, and out on the town. Bombas are what feet daydream about, and for every purchase you make, Bombas donates a pair to somebody in need. So keep cool, keep comfortable, and keep contributing with the best socks in the history of feet. Bombas. Buy your Bombas at bombas.com/Jim Rome today. Get 20% off when you do so with your first time purchase. That's bombas.com/Jim Rome. For 20% off that first purchase, bombas.com/Jim Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome, and we are spending today talking about Kobe Bryant. And if you want to call or email or text any of your remembrances, if you're having a tough time with this, it is a very difficult day, and that's what we're here for. Joining us right now is an ESPN senior NBA insider, also with NBA Countdown and SportsCenter, host of the Woj Pod, the sixth person to win three straight NSMA National Sports Writer of the Year awards, obviously greatly pedigreed and accomplished. Adrian Wojnarowski is my guest. Woj, it is good to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, I'm well. How are you?
Same, Adrian. You know, it's a conversation that I never thought that you and I would be having ever. I never thought that you and I would be talking about Kobe being gone. How are you doing today, and how are you processing this terrible news?
Yeah, I think like everyone else, just shock and shock and obviously great sadness, not only for Kobe, but his daughter and the seven others who were on the helicopter, and then obviously all the family and friends and people who are impacted by this. This is a hard one.
You know, I think, Adrian, for those who never spent any time around Kobe, and that's the majority of people, it's kind of hard to really understand what it is we're talking about here, and especially if you're outside of L.A. or you're not a Laker fan. You did spend a lot of time with Kobe over the years. How would you describe him as a person?
Well, complex, Jim, in a lot of ways. There was a there was a ferocity to him, a determination unlike anyone I've ever come across in any walk of life. I mean, Kobe was obsessive in a lot of elements of his life, but certainly his professional life and basketball and what he wanted out of, you know, what he wanted out of himself, his teammates, his coaches. He was extremely demanding of everybody around him, whether that was ownership, management, the people who covered him. And you know, he was a guy of extremes, and I think at times it helped make him the best player in the world for certainly a significant period of time, and it led to, and I think it also led to problems that came about in his life too. There was no question, you know, Kobe lived to extremes, but I do think that was tempered later in life, in these last several years. I do think his girls, his children, gave him something in his life that I thought he thought that he really needed.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. I could not agree with you more. In fact, when he retired, he talked about the fact that he had been with the Lakers for more than half his life, and when you consider the impact he had, when did you first start writing about Kobe and talking about Kobe? And then, Woj, even in retirement, how much did you continue to think about, write about, and connect with him?
Well, I remember the first time I saw him play. It was in Sullivan Arena in Fresno, California. I was working at the Fresno Bee, and the Lakers had, I think it was their first preseason game. Maybe they played one in Hawaii, but it was certainly the first or second. And I remember sitting courtside, and Kobe was 17. And I remember Del Harris screaming at him, the Laker coach, stop dribbling the ball. You're not in high school anymore. Stop dribbling. And I remember that first night. And then I felt like I started to get to know Kobe well in 2008 at the Olympics in Beijing, spending the month with him there. And felt like that started to break an ice, and I got to know him better. And then really from 08 on, built a really good working relationship with him through the two championships with the Pau Gasol team, and then through the end. And I think I connected with him less here in the last few years, and I got the sense others did too. His world was built around his daughters and his family, and while he had a lot of really remarkable media projects that he was involved with, the podcast and the children's books, and that took up a lot of his time. I was just talking to Rob Pelinka about this, a few weeks ago, and he was just telling me about Kobe coaching Gigi and how much he loved it and how much fun he was having. And, that certainly made all of yesterday and today, that much more difficult to process.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. Woj, help me with this, because there have been plenty of legends who have played for the Lakers, but nobody really had the connection with Laker fans that Kobe did. How would you describe that connection, and why was it so unique?
Yeah, impenetrable. And I think there won't be another Kobe for those fans. They watched him grow up. I mean, he came in at 17 years old. And, the Lakers, they might be the most popular team on the planet. I mean, basketball is a global sport, and the Lakers are the team. And so to be that kind of player, to really be the truest heir of Michael Jordan, the closest we saw to somebody who played like Jordan and somebody who really emulated Michael in a lot of ways, and his mannerisms on the court and how he carried himself, to win the five titles there and all the drama that came. It was Hollywood. It was a Hollywood story. Coming together with Shaq, breaking up with Shaq, on through all of it. And, Kobe to the Laker fan base is, you know, it's funny. No one they don't want to hear about the analytics and where he was, his efficiency, and some of the places where he might not compare as well with LeBron or maybe with Magic or whoever you want to compare him to, Michael. You know, I think for Kobe especially, five titles was the thing he always held up, and he knew that that still separated him from almost every other champion who played the game, and he really, really wanted that sixth title to catch Michael. Never got it.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. You know, it's so clear, and you did a great job of laying that out, Woj, about how he resonated with the Laker fans, but there's also a connection he had with the current generation of players. How would you describe the impact he's had on the players who are currently in the league?
Unlike any other player, Jim, and I was just talking to a general manager of a team today who was just telling me just his team was paralyzed. It was a team that played yesterday, and just how overwhelmed their group was. And I got a call right when I was when we were getting the information on what had happened, and you know, another GM whose star player he didn't think would be able to play, who did go out and play last night, and he, you know, Kobe commanded a respect of young players, and I think especially in the last years he became more open toward the end of his career and then in retirement, bringing guys out to LA to work with him. He opened his arms up to be more of a teacher, and you saw Kyrie Irving who couldn't play in the Nets game yesterday. He was, you know, we know he spent a lot of time with him, and Kawhi Leonard spent time with him, Jason Tatum in Boston, but he was the player's player. He, whether if you were a competitor and you went against him, or the young players coming up now who never played against him but wore his shoes and wanted to be him, I don't think there's another player quite like that, and that's not to take away from anybody else. Kobe, the whole Mamba mentality, there was a mystique and a mythology about Kobe that he knew how to really set it into motion with people, and his standing among in the basketball community is, I just think, unlike anyone else's.
Well, I mean, to that point, not just basketball people. Like, you and I have talked about this in the past, and it came up in your conversation with Ramona Shelburne on your podcast yesterday. Kobe knew our business as well as anybody did, and how the business worked and how the narratives were formed. Where did that knowledge come from, and how much did you enjoy talking with him about that?
It was always a challenge. He always had great curiosity about our world and how we competed. I know this, and for your listeners, and maybe some of your listeners are too young to remember Kobe at his height in L.A., there was nobody he respected, trusted more than Jim Rome. Nobody. And I used to, we would go down to, I remember a couple times Kobe took me down to Javier's in Newport Beach. And you'd go down and have dinner with him and talk. And then I'd hear that, like, you were down there with him. And I'm like, oh, man, Rome got another dinner with Kobe. Jeez, I wonder what he found out. And, you know, he was he really did understand how he could tell his story through the medium. And he was late to social media, and I used to tease him before he was on Twitter. And I really didn't want him to get on Twitter for my own selfish purposes, because I felt the minute Kobe gets on social media, he's not going to need me as much anymore, or need any of us. And I would say, come on, Twitter is for small talk. You're a big proclamation guy. Don't stay. And he eventually got on and enjoyed, as you know, became a great storyteller in his own right. And but Kobe, I think part of that was being in L.A. and being in Hollywood. And I think he fell in love with that industry and just had a great knack for being able to try and frame himself, not in context with the Lakers, with the league, in all of sports. And he's unlike anybody I've ever covered. And I tell people I owe a great deal of my career as an NBA reporter to Kobe, because he gave me credibility, because he was willing to trust me. He was willing to talk to me, and I don't think anything gave me more credibility in this realm than having that from Kobe for Kobe Bryant. And I think a lot of others felt that way too. I think you felt that way
100%
at times too.
100%, Woj. 100%. I was going to say at the very end of that, me too. Me too, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. So finally then, it's such a challenging thing because while you and I are both members of the media and we're supposed to be objective, at the same time, we have a personal connection. And I feel like you and I, we are members of the media. We're not supposed to mourn and grieve, but it's also hard. What was your first reaction when you heard that news yesterday? And how are you going to remember him ultimately?
Just shock, and my phone started. I was actually driving, and I was on the phone with a front office person talking about trade deadline stuff. And all of a sudden, I got a text, and then I got another, and another, and another. And I was like, "Hey, I got to call you back. Something's happening here." And I pulled off the road, and I started to realize what had happened, or what may have happened. And it was like anybody else. It was surreal, and then trying to get a confirmation on it, hoping against hope it was wrong and it wasn't true, and like everybody else, and then to find out it was. I mean, listen, I think Kobe was complex. His life was complex. His legacy will be in some ways, but I do think this about Kobe, that he always wanted to better himself, and I do think he bettered himself. We're all flawed. And Kobe was too. But I always felt Kobe was striving to be better, and I think he was. And again, and it's part of the heartbreak of Gigi and what went on at the end, to imagine that ending and to think of those who have to live without them now. But I think he wanted to be and was. I think fatherhood gave him a great purpose in life, and it gave him a great peace, and it made him want to be the best person he could be, and that's how I want to remember him, and I'm going to picture, for all the moments I witnessed with him and you witnessed with him, you know, I think about that scene in Brooklyn last month with Kobe and Gianna sitting courtside and him and her talking presumably about something that was going on the court. I want to try to remember him in that way.
Adrian Wojnarowski is my guest. It's so true. He wanted to be the best father he could possibly be, and it was so clear how crazy he was about his kids and the pride he had in them. And Woj, obviously, this is the last thing this is about is you or me, but I do want to say I know how much he thought of you. I know how much he liked you. I know how much he respected you. I know how much he respected how far you would come in the business, and it was no secret, and it was not a coincidence that he spent as much time talking about things in life with you, and that was very apparent to me. Woj, I really appreciate your thoughts on that, and I really appreciate the conversation. Like I said, I never thought that you and I would ever have a conversation like this, but I'm glad that you could spend some time with us today. Thank you.
Jim, it was an honor to be on, as always. We'll talk again soon, brother.
You got it. Take care, brother. Adrian Wojnarowski, that was very heavy, very, very, very astute conversation. But again, they spent a lot of time together, and Kobe held Woj in extremely high regard. Extremely high regard. All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, Rudy Gobert, Utah Jazz Center, joins us. That's next. Chris McGee is next hour. I know a number of you want to share your thoughts, and we will certainly do that. Call us up, 1-800-636-8686. Got a sports update coming up in about 10 seconds. First, this weekend, Party on the Green with one of the most electric crowds on the PGA Tour. Watson, Fowler, Spieth. Just some of the names that are going to be competing at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. That is a blast, that event. Getting underway at 3 Eastern and 12 Pacific on CBS. Time now for a sports update. Here you go. Here is Rich Ackerman.
Go on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Halfway through it. If you're on hold, you want to stay there. We definitely have time for your telephone calls a little bit later on. But as promised, we are joined right now by a center for the Utah Jazz. He is a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year, a 3-time All-Defensive First Team player. He helped Utah to a 19-2 record over the past 21 games by averaging 17 points, 16 rebounds, 2 blocks, and 2 assists during that span. He leads the NBA for the third straight season in screen assists with 7.7 per game. He is second in the league in field goal percentage, second in the league in rebounds per game, 34 double-doubles this season. And Utah is at home against Houston this evening. Rudy Gobert is my guest. Rudy, it is so nice to have you on. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about the amazing season you're having and how good your team is, but I need to start with the passing of Kobe Bryant. What was your reaction, Rudy, when you heard that terrible news yesterday?
I mean, it was a shock. You know, I think for all of us, we just found out right after practice and, you know, we couldn't believe it. You know, there was a big silence, and we, you know, we was trying to figure out if the news were real, and, you know, we found out a few minutes later that they were. So it was just a tough moment, you know, makes you take everything into perspective, you know, but his legacy and the impact he had, we'd be there forever.
Rudy Gobert is joining us. In fact, in terms of perspective, you tweeted yesterday, quote, enjoy every single day, people. We are always too worried about things that are actually not that important. Life is precious. You never know when it's going to end, end quote. So personally, how are you going about processing all of this?
About what? Sorry.
How are you processing this? How are you handling this?
I mean, like I said, you know, it makes you think. It makes you think a lot, and I also lost one of my friends a week ago in a car accident. So it's like, you know, you see people, and all of a sudden the next day they're just not here anymore, and you know, and you can do everything right. You know, you can eat right, you can, you know, invest your money and do all these things, and you know, and have a car accident or have someone hitting you, or you know, you just never know in life. So it's, you know, it's all about enjoying, you know, the little things every day, and, you know, and surround yourself with the people that, you know, make you better every day.
Such a great message. Rudy Gobert is joining us. So, Rudy, you're coming off a win over the Mavericks on Saturday where you had 22 points, 17 rebounds, and 5 blocks. You've had some really, really good games in your career. Where does that one rank, especially when you consider all the clutch moments that you had late in that game?
I really like the fact that, you know, we won the game. That's the main thing. You know, we didn't play our best game, but we stick together, and you know, we were able to make plays down the stretch defensively and offensively. I think it was one of our, you know, most exciting wins of this season for sure.
Rudy, one of the moments was that block on DeLon Wright's layup in the final 30 seconds that really was incredible. It was unreal because even more than that, it was the buildup to the block because you made sure that Luka did not drive. Then you made sure that Wright didn't take a three. And then you recovered to reject the layup. So what was going through your head on that entire sequence? And then how good did it feel to hear the crowd respond the way they did, chanting your name and showing you all that love?
I mean, the mindset was ready to get a stop, you know, and we were down two, so it's not like, you know, we're down three and we just don't want to give up a three. We just didn't want them to score, and, you know, we knew that they were going to go to Luka, obviously, so try to get the ball out of his hands and then, you know, and then just see what they do and try to adapt. And, you know, I was able to make a play after getting beat off the dribble, and you know, and then after that, we made a free throws and won the game. So it was it's kind of like our mindset, you know, is to not give up, and, you know, and when it matters, you know, which is at the, you know, the last minute and the last few minutes of the game, I feel like our awareness and our focus is really increased, and that's why we've been so good at the end of games.
We're talking to Rudy Gobert. Now, I know you're focused on winning, and you've been doing a whole lot of that lately, going 19-2, as I mentioned, in the last 21. But your teammates are reminding everybody that you belong in the All-Star game. Your coach, Quinn Snyder, said, when it comes to the All-Star game, quote, to be honest, to me, it's one of those things that's just self-evident, end quote. I understand that you're not focused on that, but what would it mean to you to go to the All-Star game this year?
I mean, obviously, it would mean a lot, and, you know, just because it's something that, you know, when you play basketball and when you come into the league as a kid, it's one of the things that, you know, I told myself I wanted to be. I told myself I wanted to be one of the best players in this league, and I wanted to win the championships, you know. And when we played the way we've been playing as a team, it's great to have guys that can, you know, represent our team in that kind of event, for sure.
Rudy Gobert joining me for a few more moments. You grew up roughly 90 minutes northeast of Paris. So what was life like for you growing up? You just touched on that, but what was it like growing up, and then what's it like now when you go home as an NBA star?
I mean, what was it like growing up? I mean, I really love, you know, where I grew up. I grew up with my mom, and, you know, I obviously very humble beginnings, but, you know, I think that's the reason I am who I am today. You know, I really, you know, enjoy every day as they come, and I really, you know, enjoy the little things like we talked about earlier. You know, it's all about giving everything you have for, you know, for the people around you, and you know, for me, that's why I'm so competitive. You know, I just enjoy going out there with my teammates and you know, and try to win, because it's, you know, it's really what makes you feel alive, you know, when you do those things.
Rudy Gobert, my guest. All right, final point then. To that point, you and the rest of the team have been rolling, and it seems like from the outside, I'm not there, of course, but from the outside looking in, it seems like there's something really unique or special about this group. How would you describe the chemistry of this team and what makes it special?
I mean, I think it's really like we really love each other. You know, outside the court, you can tell that, you know, we just enjoy being around each other, and you know, and we have guys that are just competitors, you know, guys that just want to win more than anything. And when you have that kind of mindset, and everyone is willing, you know, to sacrifice a little bit for the others and to make the others better, it makes, you know, it just raises the team to another level. And with the great coaching staff, and you know, and the work that we've been able to put in every day, with a group of guys like that care about winning, you know, you just feel like you're getting better and better every month, and that's pretty much what we've been doing this year.
Utah's at home against Houston tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. They have won 19 of their last 21. He is a two-time Defensive Player of the Year, a three-time All-Defensive First-Teamer. He has been playing lights out and absolutely should be an All-Star this year, Rudy Gobert. My guest, Rudy, I know it's a difficult time and a tough time to do an interview. I really appreciate you doing that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great day, Rudy. Thank you. Rudy Gobert, Utah Jazz. Definitely an All-Star, no doubt in my mind. And a star. Hard to imagine that back in the day that this was somebody who was actually overlooked. Like on the way up, was actually overlooked. Not anymore, and has not been for quite some time. All right, so hour number three sets up like this. I know a number of you have been on hold and are still on hold, and I will get to your telephone calls. I do want to finish my thoughts. This past hour, I had a number of sound bites and parts of interviews that we had done with Kobe. And some were really serious and some were funny. Some were on the radio program. Some were on the TV show. I've got some more sound that I want to play from a podcast that we did with Kobe. I thought Adrian Wojnarowski was amazing in describing what Kobe was like and his outlook and his view. And again, if you're a Laker fan and you're in Los Angeles, or you're a Laker fan and you're outside of Los Angeles, this is a really difficult day. And it's really difficult to explain to people who are not in this town, who did not have that kind of connection. And I understand that. I understand why you might not understand this, but understand that in this town, there was nobody like Kobe Bryant. He was the preeminent LA athlete of the generation. And to Woj's point, there will never be another Laker like that again. The fans will never connect with another Laker, and a Laker will never connect with this city ever again. And he was so unique because we saw him grow up. I mean, he came here as a teenager and spent his entire career here and won championships here and did it a certain way. And I thought Woj made another great point, too, that Kobe, like a lot of people, like all of us, was flawed, but continued to try to get better and better and improve. And in recent years, you could tell how much he loved and embraced being a father, how much he loved and embraced his daughters. Like, people would stop him like, yo, Kobe, you and V, you gotta have a son. He's like, no, I don't. Why? For the legacy, so we can see a Mamba Jr. And he said, Mamba Jr.'s right here. We have her. We already have her. There's my legacy right there. Chris McGee also will join us next hour and share his thoughts. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.